our ability now to analyze where we are paying our have markets for in certain instances because of the way that we had contracted, not necessarily because they did any wrong thing, but the manner in which we had approached procurement, we now know has to change so that it properly aligns to the general lease environment. We the completion of construction projects within minimal variation also reflects on the relatively low base. I think we have put in measures to really start to get to a point where we are able to improve our performance in this area. We have achieved some critical milestones in the operationalization of the TMTV, particularly the transfer of functions from the main roads to the TMTV. It is a concept I explained earlier. Successful accounting treatment of the complex transactions associated with the transfer of functions. Skills development and capacities complement the skills requirements. Again, a very difficult task for a department that has got a need to have a wide array of technical skills, particularly skills in property management, engineering services, and so on. The development of a service delivery model for DPW and TMT, the department and TMT, and we continue to be realistic to the reality that we will continue to change this or to treat it as we get better at doing understanding the business better. The strengthening of the coordination and oversight of the public sector through a more effective intergovernmental engagement process. The effective transition from phase 2 to phase 3 and the creation of 1.1 million work opportunities in 2014 and 2015. I'll be getting into the program performance, starting with program 1, which is the administration. The purpose of the program provides strategic leadership and support into the overall management of the department. The sub-programs we are talking to are ministry management processes and office accommodation. The program performance talks to 82% of internal audits completed, investigations initiated within 30 days, so all 39 of the allegations that were reported then We developed a strategic risk register in accordance with the risk management framework, customized performance indicators developed for the provinces to serve as a base for sector deliverables. 1,075 against the target of 914 beneficiaries participating in the department skills development program. These include 189 year professionals, 582 interns, 249 learners, 200 artisan trainees, and 55 management trainees. We've completed a strategic framework on youth development in the built environment to address youth unemployment in the built environment. Disaster recovery site infrastructure developed and application levels updated to support the business of the department. And we have continued to see an improvement in the payment of suppliers in 30 days. And if anyone could just contextualize why I call it an improvement is that, if you look at public works, we have improved to around 95-96%, which are able to pay within 30 days. In the PMT, we have now reached a level of on average of around 18%, which we are paying within 30 days. And we do accept and acknowledge that with all these systems that we are implementing, we are aiming to have 100% effort, which is a compliance benchmark. Then I go into program 2. Which is aimed to provide and manage government's renewable property portfolio in support of government social, economic, functional, and political objectives. programs being studied, effective asset analysis, capacity regeneration, key account management, special intervention program project, and professional services. In terms of some of the highlights here, you look at the information fields on the movable asset register populated on 32,677. Properties out of a target of 56,831. The context being that in the previous year, what we had done is we had established a target which was multi-year, but the overall target was static in the sense that we needed to achieve X amount of the properties, being the number of properties that had been scoped for verification, for example. So in the first year we ran ahead in terms of the program. In the second year we had omitted to revise the targets to align to the overall target and the number of assets. So in the second year it looks like a significant under performance, but we will share the detail of that. I'm sure Ms. Mathis will clearly do that when we are doing the detailed and Q&A. 180 projects out of a target of 542 were completed within a minimum prescribed target. 23 out of 51 buildings were made accessible. We do acknowledge that there is underperformance in the following areas, but if one looks at the relative improvements in relation to the turnaround time, you will then start to see the improvements year on year that we are making. Yes, it is right that we continue to set ambitious targets, but in this area we perhaps did not get to the level that we had hoped. In the current year, we have sought to try and resolve some of these matters by fresh initiatives that are aimed at helping up the homeless. All of the very possible entries were maintained across the country. We have put in place maintenance programs which are aimed at particularly addressing the land possible entry. And I think in reality the impact in terms of the look and feel of those facilities will start to be evident in subsequent years, because we've got the programs, we've got the contracts in some of those land also entry. We have developed a special development framework. It's been approved as part of the inner city regeneration to ensure integrated development planning across the spheres of government. Moving on to other performance areas, we are still on progress here. 9,229 installations were completed towards energy efficiency. I think the target was 300 today. We retrofitted 11 buildings with water savings installations out of a target of 19. We retrofitted 91 buildings with waste management systems, which for example deals with the separation of water waste at the source, out of a target of 22 buildings. We have retrofitted 91. 180 smart meters have been installed in various buildings and elements to contribute to energy efficiency. It's part of a program that we are aiming to roll out. Climate survey index developed to gauge the level of climate satisfaction with the services developed by the department. 1,851 maintenance issues for prestige accommodation were resolved within 5 days after logging and complete. With respect to the efficiencies, there of 2,629 maintenance issues for prestige accommodation, excluding electricity and plumbing when solved within 30 days after logging and complaint. The debt owed to municipalities, rent and rates was confirmed to be 69 million, and of this amount, 19 million rent has been paid. Sorry, 60 million, sorry. I will reread for the record. The debt owed to municipalities was confirmed to be 69 million, and of this amount, 60 million rent has been paid. Thank you, sir. Some of the projects we have given some examples of the next two pages, 23, 24, 25. I'm not going to match all those details, but I think this is the detail that has just been given some of the examples of the projects countrywide. And I'll move into program 3, which is EPWP. The purpose of the program to provide work opportunities and income support to poor and unemployed people through labor-intensive delivery of public and community assistance services. Sub-programs being expanded public works program, performance-based incentive allocations. With a budget of 1.946 million, the expenditure being 1.925 million. At a rate of 99%. The impact thereof has been the creation of 1.103983 work opportunities created against the target of 1,045,000. 780,000 work opportunities created in the rural municipalities against the target of 600,000. 100% of our incentive allocations have been dispersed to eligible public bodies across all sectors. 3,860 beneficiaries came through the National Skills Fund against a target of 800. The perspective with respect to the work opportunities at province and at municipality, the perspective provincially, Eastern Cape, 205%, so work opportunities reported 82,477, Free State 21,799, Gauteng 51,385, KZN 11,956, Limpopo 32,916, Malaga 34,269, Northern Cape 12,104, Northwest 89971, Western Cape 35018, with a total of 412,095, which is 122% on average above the target. Then if one looks at the municipalities by province, so consolidated by province, Eastern Cape one starts to see that Eastern Cape is at 96% of expenditure in relation to the transfers and transfers allocated. Free State 94%, Gauteng 93%, KZN 94%, Limpopo 98%, Mpumalanga 91%, Northern Cape 89%, 84% in the Northwest and Western Cape 98%. So on average, 94% of the integrated grant funds transferred have been expended. The 6% on average is in attribute to the timing of implementation versus the transfer. This one then looks at it slightly differently, which is the EPWP expenditure by profit of dispersed EPWP integrated grant funds. We then sit with a expenditure spent of 92%, which is made up of Eastern Cape at 93%, Free State 89%, Gauteng 87%, KZN 96%, Limpopo 83%, Mpumalanga 90%, Northern Cape 89%, Northwest 97%, Western Cape 89%. When we then move on to Program 4, Property and Construction Industry Policy Regulation, the purpose of the program is to promote the growth and transformation of the construction and property industries. The sub-programs being Construction Industry Development Program, Property Industry Development Program. Budget 34 million, then the expenditure 31 million at a rate of 91%. We have completed the expropriation bill to be submitted to Parliament for consideration. The Anima South Africa bill was completed and submitted to Parliament for consideration. And we have completed a revised business case for the ICT, and it's currently under consideration by all the relevant stakeholders. In terms of Program 5, which is auxiliary and associated services, the budget is 132 million, expenditure 132 million, and we have provided infrastructure support, particularly to 23 prestige events against the target of 30. I'm going to conclude on this section and ask that part 7 is dealt with by the CFO.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. I'll try and just walk us through the spending of the department against what was spent and try and explain where the variances happened. Maybe as a start, in terms of the historical perspective that Mr. Sirote indicated earlier on, or in actual fact, let me start by saying the presentation on the financial performance and position will be broken down between the main vote, which is the public vote fund, and the public the property management trading entity. So two separate files, separate sets of financial statements, if you look at our annual report, which are prepared on different bases. One is a modified cash, and the other one is on an accrual basis. The modified cash being for the main vote, and the accrual basis being for the property management trading entity. In terms of the historic history of where we are coming from the main goals perspective, dealing with Strike 33, and in terms of Strike 13, that the head of PMT, Mr. Sirote, had indicated in terms of the graphs that he showed to indicate the improvements from an audit outcome perspective. Strike 33 tries to unpack what in the main vote were the issues and how we resolved these issues over time. Now, if you look at the slides on your extreme left, it indicates that the 2012-11-12, it indicates the disclaimer. And a disclaimer in terms of height, many things, and as you can see, there's about 8 things. And we tried to drop this as we go down in terms of timelines. There were a number of issues that resulted in this claim, as you can see, the irregular expenditure, the fruitless and risk expenditure, the whole issues around the intangible assets, which are the asset portfolio that we have, the operating leases, as you know, that is our core of our business, and the related issues around the leases, around the SCBA lease commitments, and in terms of infrastructure projects that we are executing on behalf of our client departments, including ourselves, the capital commitments. Then the issues around the related party. As you know, that there's two reporting entities, one being the main board, as I said, and the one being the property management trading entity. Now there's transactions that occur between the two, and the nature of the disclosure in terms of the related party transactions having been an issue as well. And then all the things around the receivables of what happened to revenue. I've seen how the charge in the marketplace and others. That's the history 11-12. And as you can see, I mean, this indicates very acute levels of underperformance from a financial management perspective. Claim hasn't come from didn't arise in 11-12 alone. It comes back 2009, 10, 11, 11-12. So it's been a very consistent underperformance that the department was achieving. We then had a turnaround and at the beginning of 12, and the result of the turnaround intervention and the turnaround intervention projects that we executed resulted in us, from a main board's perspective, moving from a disclaim to a qualification. And it is really a very strange thing that people do, or in this environment, it was a major achievement for us in starting off from a low base, that we actually called for some kind of a rule of submission that we managed to move from a disclaimer to a qualification. And with a reduced amount of cash, when you look at it, when you compare year-on-year, from 8 items in the disclaimer to 3 items under the qualification. And then we started getting more improvements in 13-14 with the unqualified outcome that we received, and just a few matters embraced, which, as the AG calls them, are some matter that they just bring to the attention of the reader of the financial statements that they must be aware of. Not necessarily that there's negativity, but they also mentioned that because it's necessary for the reader to understand their context and where they're going. And similarly, in 14-15, we maintained that unqualified total outcome, and also with the matters that have been raised by the AG. We believe that in the main vote, from a planning perspective and forward, that we could actually achieve a clean audit in the future. And I think that's where we're striving to go in a year or two to come. Just those are a few things that we need to resolve. Just in terms of the appropriation statement, let's know that the financial statements of the main vote will have an appropriation statement, will have a financial position, and will have a financial performance, and I'll try to explain these as I go along. In terms of the appropriation statement, it indicates on slide 36, I just wanted to show you the bottom number on slide 36. Slide 36 gives you the total portfolio size in terms of the money that you spend. That's about 6.1 billion rand that you spend on the main vote. As an appropriation. For invest slide 35, and because I'm trying to explain the appropriation, in terms of our main vote, we have five programs. Program 1 being administration, program 2 being the removal asset management, program 3 being our EPWP, 4 being our policy, and 5 being auxiliary and associated resources. That's in accordance with the program budget structures we had in there, before the fundamental shifts that we introduced in terms of the transfer functions of the PMTE and the rejigging and recalibration of the actual programs of the department. That's how it actually looked like. So you have an appropriation that you are given in terms of your submissions when you did the MTF and actually providing you a letter of allocation as a department. That's the adjustment. Adjusted appropriation. as you go along in the year, there are things that you start to realize that you're not going to be able to do in terms of your programs, say, the different spending and economic aspects within the program, that then requires you to do a short to ensure that you balance your budget at all times. Hence the short team of funds column, that's what it talks to. And these are the things that you do to try and make sure that you ensure that you don't have, you don't report on one side over expenditure, on the other side under expenditure, so you need to just do the safety. In terms of law and in terms of what the Public Finance Management Act provides. Then, moving from that is the violence. Violence being, if you indicate, if you look at your programs, you have one program that overspends or another program that underspends. And then you do the balancing there of the money to have violence. To do that, you need the Treasury's approval to be able to do that. And that's a column on the violence and I explain the movements of the money as they go along there. So administration, that's the one, that is the one program. The removal assets, those are the two that are appearing on slide 35 there. As you can see, the shifting of funds was quite minimal in terms of the total number that we're looking at. The more material numbers would be under the environment, and as you can see, the environment sector that will be done, that was done in the year under review. That's for the two programs, and similarly for the program three, where there's been also violence, program four, say, and a huge environment in favor of the program five, 40.2 million rights, that's done to try and offset some kind of over expenditure that we've reported, and I'll get into the scale of that. Slide 37 starts to talk about now what we do in terms of those environments, and as you can see on the slide 35, where we indicate the environment of 15.3 million rands from administration. That's why the figure is in practice. It shows the monies will come from one program, which is administration program one, into program two, removal assets management. And under which economic classification would be goods and services, 13.3, and we also moved it to a similar economic classification, but under a different program in the main book of 13.3. So the one program took away 13.3 because of under expenditure and put it into the next program because of over expenditure to China setback. And as you can see, the motivation for that being spending in program one due to not equal size. As a result of changes in banking detail that took time, so we had excess money in the account, we moved that money to that program to offset to utilize the money to offset increased expenditure for the maintenance and repairs in program two, which was higher than expected, which was about 194 million rands, but the actual spending was about 125, so we needed to close that gap. And then in terms of the program two, we moved 39.3 million out of payment for capital assets. And of that 39.3 million rands, we moved 38.2 million to auxiliary resources and goods and sources. Again, as you can see, it's from one program to another, and also from one economic classification to another economic classification, and as I indicated, these are the things that you would require a specific approval by your relevant authority, being the National Treasury, to do this. So the underspending under the program two relate to infrastructure projects that we do not execute, and these funds were approved by National Treasury to augment the unforeseen and unavailable expenditure related to the official funerals that we had last year, which were budgeted for, and all these kind of things that happened to go and offset the expenditure under the auxiliary and over expenditure under the auxiliary and associated services. Moving on to an additional 1 million was moved to payment for capital assets under administration, and that was done to deal with the underspending on machinery equipment to be utilized to offset high spending in program one related to that expenditure item. Under the EPWP, we moved crop compensation of employees 3.8 million, right? And that was moved to the program two, in rural assets management and goods and services. And the understanding on the EPWP was because of the vacant positions that were not filled in the year, early on in the year, but it was a lot of part of the year because of the whole process of advertising and all that. So the monies were sitting there, we didn't spend the money, so we utilized the money to offset increased expenditure for maintenance and repairs like that. I indicated that we had 94 $4 million in the budget, but the actual spending was about $102.5 million, so you need to offset that. And then just a small amount into the 1986, which I'm not going to get into detail of that. And then under the property construction, we moved to $2 million out of the resources and moved to $2 million resources to go and offset their expenditure on the augment the supporting program fund because of all these unforeseen and unavailable events that took place in terms of the funerals and the burials that took place. Coming on to taking our appropriation, this is what was publicly voted in terms of the province, 6.2 billion rand, 6.1 billion rand public. What did we spend? That is that, and if you look at slide 41, just to give you an indication, the bottom number, the final appropriation that I indicated earlier was 6.1 billion rand. What of the actual expenditure in the year was 6 billion, which means we spent 98.4% of what we were given. And going back to indicate now where the various in terms of expenditure are, I'll go back to slide 14. I just wanted to give you a sense of what we're looking at. Again, we're looking at this is per program and to indicate, you know, the spending that happened. And as you can see, into the current payments on a program one, we spent about 99.6%. The transfers and subsidies on program one, small number, spent about 62%, and that's the reasons why those violence had to happen. Similarly, payments for capital assets on program one, 100%, and our financial assets were a small number. Under the removal efforts, again, that's the expenditure. Actual, that is appropriation. You can say actual against budget, what was budget for, to indicate your performance, financial performance. And like I said, overall, 98.4% was spent. Similarly, on EPWP, you can see the spending in terms of different classifications there and under the property and construction industry regulations, as well as the auxiliary and associated services. If we had not done the violence, we have done the shifting of the funds to balance the budget, the spending would have been far more different because of the things that happened in the year. And again, we are trying to explain the variances that occurred on slide 42. Under the administration, we had indicated an under expenditure of 4.4 million under the 40 of 4 million, which is about 0.5% difference. And then the spending of 3.7 million under compensation of employees was due to post that became vacant until the end of the financial year and went up immediately for it. Takes a lot of time. Then transfers and subsidies for household and was spent by 444,000 due to actual expenditure for different treaties below that the projections. It's always a problem. You can't really tell what your legal treaties will be, who people are going to be living. So whatever you at the end of the time here, you can then work out the actual effect. And then under removal efforts, as you can see on the slide 14, those variables there, and the spending of 21 million, which is the big number. Let's go back to slide 40. That's the number, the bottom, the third number on the second column from the right. That's the 70.6 million, right? Explain that on slide 42, but under spending, which was equivalent to 2.5 of the total that was allocated, and was due to the due to payments that were made by the main vote but could not be recovered from TMT entirely. And then we had to reflect. Payments were made by the TMT but had to be recovered from the main vote, but it was not done timely in terms of time. And we could not deflect the payment in the main vote and hence the expenditure. The programs and projects were executable. And then under the EPWP, which is on slide 41, if you look at the different items, there's an underspending of 21 million rands in totality, which is 20.9 if you look at the slide. And there was due to spending on payments of capital assets. Compensation of employees, which is a 17 million rands underspending, which was due to the vacant positions which I indicated to earlier on, that were filled in a lot of part of the financial year. The goods and services, about 3 million, due to competent services, but not delivered before the end of the financial year. So commitments, because it's cash-based accounting, even though you have the commitment, you can't reflect the payment, you can't reflect the expenditure. You have to reflect the expenditure only when cash has moved, whereas it's different when you do the PFTE on accrual basis. Yeah. Then, transfers and subsidies of other minerals under spending is due to funds that were held under the EPWP to two Limpopo provincial departments for not complying with the conditions of the DORA that was held under minerals as a result of that non-compliance. And under property and construction and industry regulations, that will be on slide 41 in terms of the detail and terms of spending. The explanation of slide 43 comes to that. The underspending of 2.9, as you can see on slide 41, and then underspending on composition of employees of 1 million rands and goods and services of 12.7, and overspending of 11 million on transfers and subsidies. And I'll explain those. Under overspending of 11 million rands on transfers and subsidies, because the transfers that we are providing to Agrima SA would be recorded under transfers, whereas the budget is sitting somewhere else in the top economic classification, which is under your goods sources. And as on the one, you have an overspending because it's where your expenditure reflects, and on the other, you're going to have underspending because the budget is there, but the spend doesn't go against it. The reason being because as you are a certain entity, and we could not then do the transfer legally to be classified as a transfer either to foreign businesses and have the disjunction. But when you look at the two, the one is overspending, the one is underspending, they kind of relate to the same thing. With the passing of the Agrima Act, which has happened, this situation will go away before. So it's done now. The Act has been passed, the notification has come through, and now we have an Agrima Act, which establishes Agrima South Africa as a fully fledged public entity. And this has been a situation that goes back, I think the Agrima has been around since the 1960s, and it has not actually been an entity. In terms of the law, it has been an arrangement. Now that it's been resolved. And then under auxiliary and associated services, we have no variance because we managed to do the necessary requirements to deal with the over and under expenditures. And then now we have we've done the same report of what was voted into the budget against actual, but just changed it to indicate under the economic classification what kind of different economic classification expenditures that we had. As you can see, the bottom numbers remain the same. Final appropriations 6.1, actual expenditure 6 million. And in terms of the economic classifications that we have, is current payments, and on the current payments you've got your compensation of employees, you've got your goods and services, and so number of those goods on that. And then under transfers, the major category of economic classifications, you've got all those transfers that are being provinces and municipalities, which are mostly your EBWP transfers, instead of transfers, transfers that are providing the provinces and municipalities. The departmental agencies and accounts, there will be what the main vote transfers to its entities as well as the PFTE, Property Management Trading Entity. Foreign governments and international organizations, that's our contribution towards the common world grace that we are maintaining. And then non-profit institutions, that would be also the transfers, as in your transfers to your entities and your PWP non-state center. And then on the payments of capital assets, you've got the buildings and other structures, that's the main and the machinery and equipment for the things that we're using in the department or office as a tools of our trade. Now the expenses against that in terms of the economic classification, we was further on trying to extend them globally in terms of compensation of employees when you look at line 44. In totality, the department has about 1.6 billion rands budgeted for an compensation of employees. We spend about 1.59 billion, which means we underspent by 18.8 billion rands. So in terms of the total spending, we spend 98.8% of what we are given for compensation of employees against Similarly, with services, 99%, and so it goes. The next slide is slide 44, which I'll explain. Those are various. The first one is the compensation of employees, the underspending of 19 million to the 18.8 million, mainly due to, as I did explain earlier on, that these are vacant positions which became vacant towards the latter part of the year and could not afford to have the money sent there. Under goods and services, underspending of 40 million that relates to late receipt of invoices for 3 million that could not be processed before the financial year end, and the balance of 11 relate to the budget, to the budget application of a quarterly asset, as I did say. Allocations under a different classification, the expenditure goes to a different classification, and that's where the difference comes. Parcel payments, provinces and municipalities, they are under spending of 1.2 million relates to those funds that are indicated earlier on the global account. The PWP social sector, the two Limpopo province departments, due to their non-compliance with DORA. And that's where the relationship of that goods and services that I indicated of the in advance that relates to Agrima SE, which has been posted under transfers and subsidies, so the over expenditure, that 11 million rand there is very capsule to offset that under expenditure under the goods and services. And the payments for capital assets, I did give you a report, that it was a timing difference of the claims between the PFTE and the department resulting in the 21 million rand underspending the report in the main vote. Then in terms of the main vote financial statements, slide 46 and 47, financial performance, which in normal terms is like your balance sheet of the department of your income statement of the department. What are the revenues that you're collecting and what is the expenditures against those revenues? And the main revenue line of the department would be the annual appropriation. That's the money that comes from the national fiscal and income will process income. 6.1 billion that we are getting from the national fiscal to say that's your revenue. And what is other revenues that we are collecting, that's what we call the departmental revenue. What we've done is we've compared year on year. What was last year and what is the current year that we are reporting, and try to explain the comparative, the differences in the 2 years, year, year, year. So there's revenue, there's expenses. So we have the main line, the main source of revenue is the ones that are given by the national system, and where we spend that money. We spend that money on the compensation of employees, we spend that money on the business services, we spend money on interest and rent on land, the transfer that you are doing, the tangible assets that you are paying for, if it's about infrastructure project, the tangible assets, and payments for financial assets. And then the difference between the revenue, what you are collecting, and what we are paying, gives us a surplus or a deficit. And we've reported a surplus of 15 million rands in the current year compared to a surplus in the prior year of 208 million rands. Basically, it is not, you're not looking for a surplus in the government, as you know that we need to spend the money, and that's just an indication of where the under expenditures happen. Okay. We compare, as I said, year on year in terms of the financial performance. And the next slide is just to try to explain the main numbers that are appearing on slide 47 that shows the variances. If you look at annual appropriation, there's a 54 million difference year on year, which is, if you look at it, and because our appropriation was reduced, what we got from the national assistance in the current year was 54 million less than what we got in the previous year. And this is just on nominal terms, not on real terms. In terms of real terms, if you take the inflation factor, the number could be quite big, even though we are adjusting for inflation. And the departmental revenue, or maybe let me just slide 48. The compensation of employees in terms of expenditure, the increase was purely due to the inflationary increase that was given and the meaning of positions that deserve to get upwards in the year as part of the negotiations of our unions generally as in the process. Then year on year goods and services, there was an increase of about 112 million, and that was precisely because we reclassified from our capital, tangible capital assets, we reclassified 112 million rands from there to say, to indicate that it's not capital, but to the current maintenance cost, and that's where it comes from. The transfers and subsidies is an 18 million decrease due to budget reduction under EPWP conditional grants for both provinces and municipalities, and that's for the integrated external sector grants. And then general capital assets, year-on-year reduction in volumes and other fixtures of 195 due to the reduced allocation and increase in expenditure in machinery and equipment. And then we reclassified out of this type of expenditure, economic classification, we reclassified what was actually current or maintenance under goods and services out of this, taken out of the infrastructure budget, which is 100,000, as you can see in the goods and services there. And under intangible assets, so 50 million rand decreased expenditure due to IT software acquired when compared to 2013-14. And then we get to the financial position. Financial position is like your balance sheet of the department, which shows your total assets and your total ability to indicate whether we are in a net asset or a net liability situation. And as you can see, we're net asset 10.6 million compared to last year, 12.9 million asset position. And again, year on year, and the asset specifications that you have, the first one is your unauthorized expenditure. And you know that unauthorized expenditure is expenditure that you may have incurred that is not within your mandate. It will be classified as unauthorized. You can only declassify this unauthorized expenditure once it's been put for Parliament and Parliament said you spend money and it's correct. You are going to have to have your mandate. And we'll talk to the unauthorized expenditure in terms of where that comes from in the next slide that will follow. Your cash and cash equivalents, your prepayments and advances, is that you pay in advance, that's an asset. And your receivables and what you need to collect from people who owe you. Your liabilities, we certainly were funded you to pay back to the National Fiscus, the Fiscus, which are voted first with surrender to the revenue fund, which is the money that you have not spent, which almost talks to your, I wanted to talk to, which almost talks to your almost your surplus, if you look at it. Yeah. It almost talks to your surplus. I'm in the wrong direction. Perform partner. Where am I? Yeah. Where is it? Where am I? No, no, we give a direction. Yeah. Where was I on the direction?
Yeah.
9. 49. 49, yeah, okay. So the voted funds is rendered to the revenue fund. I mean, if you look at your surplus, whatever, almost up to that, with a few adjustments and reconciliations, but I'm not sure that's what it means. It means you have money that you have not spent, and by year end, if you have money that you have not spent, you must take it back to the national fiscus. And if you have not taken it back to the national fiscus, you must reflect that money as a liability. Then your bank overdraft that you have, which is a consequence of your unauthorized expenditure. Unauthorized expenditure, the effect of an unauthorized expenditure, that you spend the money. Because this money is spent and it's not within your mandate, it is not recognized as an expense. So as a department, you must pay the cash. But you are not able to offset that cash against the money that you're going to get from the national office, from treasury. And as a result, your bank overdraft in terms of your post of a paymaster general account will become a bigger overdraft because of this one. So you've got money that you spend, and it's not recognized as an expenditure, but outside your bank. So that's what it actually means. And now we're trying to explain that. Why has unauthorized expenditure increased by 5.5 year on year? You can see the reason is because of we have obligations that relate to old commitments, that relate to old unauthorized expenditure that drafted. And those commitments have to be met. And 6 million rand was towards those commitments. The rest goes back many years. And like I said, we'll unpack what that unauthorized expenditure was. Prepayment and advances, improved spending on advance payments compared to the previous financial year, that's what we have, and less prepayment made because of trade licenses compared to the previous year. And the receivables, decreasing staff debt from 4.6 million to 1.3 at the end of the 2014 financial together along with them for the hosting of the International Conference that happened. Then voted funds surrendered, the reduction of the budget allocation, and the balance are spent to the end of the financial year of last year, just funds to surrender. The revenue refunds of 20 years of outcome of the reconciliations that we performed, which we received in the end of, March, month of March, was surrendered later, and that's what they took. And the refund was received in 450. The bank overdraft, the surrendered funds, 215 million during the year, against the net surplus of 150, and the positive movement in working capital movement of 39, and then this bank overdraft by 61. If you take this view that do a reconciliation, it can be a very long thing. But that's literally in a nutshell what it actually comes to, all compressed into all of this. And the payables relate to 10 million received from the Eastern Cape Department of Public Works for construction of bridges. So we got the money, we need to be paying back to them because the person will not compete. And the 68 million rands received from the Department of Higher Education for the National Skills Fund. 50 million rands was received in March 2013 for the Department of Education for the new training projects, basically. That deals with the main hooks in terms of the financial statements appropriation, the financial performance, and the financial position. And we've tried to explain the area differences that the result of. Going to a small complex set of financials again, which is now your property management trading entity. Financial statements, which, like I said, is an accrual-based accounting that we use for the property management trading entity. To make it more complex, there's been a transfer of functions from the main vault in terms of the property-related functions that were in the main vault. They've been transferred to the property management trading entity so that the main vault's focus is no longer on execution of projects and management of our property portfolio, but being to regulate the sector and set policy and profit loss for our kid out of our money. The main execution in terms of activities of property related functions, construction, all of that, now will happen in the PMT. This is what the intentions have been always with the establishment or the approval that we had since 2006 for the establishment of the property management trading entity. What we are doing, we are giving effect to that approval that has been sitting and waiting to happen. The complexity in terms of the financials is that the budget is sitting in the main vault and the functions are transferred to PMT. So, in the year under review. It's only in this current year that now the budget itself has been transferred from the main vault to the PMT of those related functions. So it will simplify in the current year the accounting as opposed to the way we have it now. Very complex. So, if you look at the history now of the PMT where we are coming from, again, 11 term, you've got a laundry list of issues that resulted in our disclaimer and that tall list, a whole lot of things. And we had a turnaround iteration in 11 towards the end of 11 term. The minister called for the turnaround and we managed to resume those things in a way. And the difficulty was just overnight. I mean, if you look at the main vote, the nature of the improvements 11, 12 to 12, 30 were quite significant, but if you compare them to the 50, it's a little insignificant. Why? Again, like I said, it's a very complex environment in the 50. So we have those things we have to deal with, systemic things that are so embedded within the transactions of the 50. As we stayed with the scale in 12, 30. We worked very hard and we managed to reduce the issues and also improve the overall outcome from a disclaimer to qualification in 1340. And in the year under review that we are reporting on, we stable qualification, however, we reduced the issues significantly that were the basis of the qualification, significant of which is the issues around the leases that we managed to do away with. And as you know, as well as the issues of leases, common knowledge just all over in the public domain of the leases. We managed to deal with that and stayed with much more technical accounting issues that resulted in the qualification, and then issues around the accruals and
taxes in total payments that it did.
So that's really where we have a big deal. We believe we can improve this even further. We have to. We are introducing new systems in terms of accounting, and in terms of running the business, we are introducing new operational systems, as in your leases, your immovable assets, how you're going to account for them. And all these things come with their own complexity as you do them. The more you improve, the more you can actually end up with that in terms of an outcome perspective until you get it right. So that's where we are. We are literally in a state of change in the PMTE. And the idea is to ensure that this change is embedded in the organization by the introduction of systems that are published. So that's the nature of where we are. There's been, like I said, significant improvements. And in terms of that slide 15 that Professor Rotu was speaking, in terms of the graph that shows the improvement, if you look at the 2 years at the PMTE, 13-14 and 14-15, that line is very flat, but it's not actually flat if you look at this year. And it's just the quantification or the weight of the things that we apply. It's a typical modeling of weighting. You'll actually see the significant change that is there. Not just saying the fact that you an overall outcome, which is the same as the one of last year. I think it's a quality that you need to look at. And then in terms of the PMTE, I'll start with the financial position, which is like, as you call it, it's the balance sheet of the PMTE. You look at the bottom number there. PMTE is, as we had it last year, it's 81.7 billion rands operation in terms of assets. And if you take the liabilities of the net life, that you can see there, which are 8.1 billion, it gives you a net worth of the PMG of about 73.6 billion rands as an entity. Very significant. And this is based on having only managed to apply a fair value to your assets, to the extent of about 60% of your assets, which you can see when you look at slide 34. Under non-current assets, you look at your PPEs, your property, plant, and equipment, you have actually adjusted the values to 11.9 billion, investment property of 66.5 billion. That is the result of why we have such a massive wealth as an entity. So that's really what you'd say if you were going to go out and say, I'm trying to use my asset portfolio and raise, and I'm a determined one, but I'm worth. Say, that's what you're worth as a PMTE, which is the worth of net worth of about 3.6 billion rands. And that's how it is. Now, there's been some disasters. There's a lot of technical accounting issues with respect to PMTE, with the advent of what you call the transfer of functions without the transfer of budget. Your accounting becomes very interesting in terms of complexity. You'll have what you call, in terms of the definition, you'll have revenues from exchange transactions, you'll have revenue from non-exchange transactions, you'll have the concomitant other entries to your balance sheet that talks to all those things in terms of your receivables and your payables related to those kind of transactions. So now your first transactions are a balance that you have in your balance sheet is the receivables from exchange transactions, but exchange transactions would be receivables transactions that are arm's length, that you pay to get value. What you do, you get paid for. Time. So that's your arm's length kind of transaction. And if you look at it, and here would be something like us doing infrastructure projects for our departments, for our client departments. A better example, leasing, providing our departments with buildings, with pay for those buildings. That's an exchange transaction. Not exchange transaction would be where we are not actually providing any service, but we get something back. And we'll explain that further. And then there's also exchange transactions. There's been an increase. And this is an increase from client departments, which is in totality we receive something in the order of about 14 billion rands of client funds recoverable within a financial year. So that's how big the process is running. Then still from non-exchange transactions, an increase relates to the future benefit employees of future employee benefits receivable from the PWD as a result of the transfer function. The main book pays, like all the stuff, are recorded and paid for and accounted in the main book as the payment for salaries. Even though those people are supposed to go for the PMD. And what happens with their expenditure, which we see, which the person does, you know, in time, we must recognize that as an income. And so, even the future benefit that relates to that must also be recorded as a future liability. That's where the resource for managed exchange transactions come from. Operating lease assets, again, in terms of the lease renewals as well as the impact of streamlining. And that's all going to include the leases, how you account for them, and what you, and then the cash and cash equivalents. And under non-current assets, like I said, your assets that you have there, which I explained earlier on, that's your portfolio that you have, the portfolio of your plus minus 30,000 land parcels, plus minus 110 structures from the land parcels. That's the value that you have, that you've managed to attach to the assets, 20% of that, those assets. And then that's the liabilities, again, trying to explain what, you know, the difference year on year of those liabilities, your operating lease liabilities, your cash and cash equivalents, your payables from exchange transactions, your retention liabilities, your employee benefit obligations, in terms of the people that you have, your provisions, your fund lease obligations, and then your non-current is just the classification between current and non-current. Again, very technical accounting basis and ways of doing things. And under financial performance, your revenue, like we said, total revenue is about 10.4 billion compared to last year 9.7 billion. And what makes up the revenue is revenue from exchange transactions, which is what you actually do on an arm's-length basis, and revenue from non-exchange transactions, which relates to sales in kind from the main book, which we have recognized as revenue. The expenditure is what is there, operating expenses. There's a whole long list of what makes up the operating expenses. Then the rest is just the use of expense and employee costs, giving us a surplus of 854 in the current year versus 1.4 in the previous year. And then unauthorized expenditures, I did indicate, you remember, you recall that I indicated that unauthorized expenditures was sitting at about 261 million, and there was a 6 million rand increase in the current year from the prior year. The makeup of that unauthorized expenditure was overspending on compensation of employees going back many years, 7 million, on goods and services, 13.6 million. Unauthorized expenditures as a result of capital expenditure of schools, 168 million. On capital assets, 2.9, and on personal subsidies, 2.3, giving us the balance that comes for many years of 255 million rand, which, like I said, has increased, was about 6 million rand in the current year because of the obligations and the contractual obligations that we have on the schools. The school that I referred to is the art schools that were in the Eastern Cape and the Northwest that we did. You recall that years back was a drive to eradicate art schools in the country, and that's where the expenditure came from. As you may know, it is not the department's mandate to spend money on to schools, that's sort of the basic education, but we actually did it, and that's where it comes from. The schools are there, with the pictures, they're still around. We've actually made a submission to Treasury and to come to Parliament to vote these funds to be appropriate. And that was a request, an instruction that we got from SCOPA to take this through the channels for approval, and that's been done. So in the year that follows, so soon, we will have no bans on unauthorized expenditure because of the approvals that will be granted. And like I said, that's the breakdown where the unauthorized expenditure comes from. And we can get to the detail of that. And then when it comes to food and wasteful expenditure, also, as you can see, most of it comes from years back. There's been significant reductions. If you look at the main boat, we moved from 49 million to about 1 million. PMD from 35 million to 61 million. and due to cases that have been investigated, due to the factors, these are putting away. So slowly but surely starting to chisel away all these historical baggage that you have as a department based on the historical issues going back many years. We're dealing with that slowly but surely. And that's just a reconciliation to show where the food service from the furniture came from, which is a book that's in the first statement. And then under the irregular expenditure, you'll recall that in the previous year we had reported 34 billion rand of irregular expenditure. That number has been reduced significantly to about 32 billion now, as we are sitting. And as we are sitting now, the number, even that also has been resolved in a way through the process that has been established by National Treasury. And we will, in the current year, when you report them to financial accounts, to the a significantly reduced numbers well below far from the level that you were talking about before. I was just giving you an indication of that, that has been reported in the prior year. I think that's, I thought I would just highlight those two ones for yourselves, because I think that as oversight bodies, you have an interesting level of announcement expenditure has been done with it, the level of the food service expenditure has been done with it, and the level of the expenditure as a department that they have to do with it. I think that I'm sure, I'm sorry for taking a lot of your time on the members and a very difficult subject, but I hope I've tried to cast some light on the affairs of the department as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Coxon. Thanks, Chairperson. I think just in concluding, over the years, the performance of the department has improved together with the positive audit outcomes as confirmation, particularly on the governance side. Our overall performance for the 14-15 financial year performance stands at 51%, and we are not saying we are happy or satisfied with it, but the context of it is the turnaround plan of the department, the 7-year turnaround plan that started in 2012. Minister likens the stage we are in to a patient that is out of ICU and still receiving care. The performance has moved from a relatively low base in 2012-13 of around 35% to 51% in 14-15 financial year. This has also improved the audit findings from disclaimer to unqualified in the main vote and still qualified in the PMT. And we believe the turnaround plans bring about efficiencies and long-term growth in the way the department is reflecting performance currently. And I think that's the context, and I would like to thank the chair and the honourable members. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sirota, and also to our CFO, Mr. Mukhoro. It has been a long presentation. What we do normally is at the beginning of the presentation, we ask you how much time and try and control that. But thanks very much. It was detailed. I would just, before we open it to the floor for engagement, make one comment on your slide 30. Where you are referring to the expropriation column. It has not been considered by Parliament. It's been considered by the National Assembly. It must still come to us in the NCOB. Okay, because we're going to adopt your report or deal with it, so I thought it's going to be important in that issue. Just clear that. But we also find that may people in the South African society make the mistake that they can't appreciate the distinctive functions between the two houses of Parliament. That being said, honourable members, may I then seek your cooperation that what we do is to prioritise our 30 questions. You may have more than that or comments. And then go into that and see if we can make it for a second round as well. It's now 11:45 on my watch, so we may want to go on with this until after stuff. What's your position? The floor is open for members to engage with the presentation. I notice Honorable Intimunia, Honorable Faber, and then Honorable Tere in that sequence. Let's take that as the first round. Honorable Intimunia is from Mpumalanga. Honorable Faber is from Northern Cape, and Honorable Tere is from Northwest. They may raise issues related to their provinces as well. Thank you, Honorable Intimunia.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Mr. Soroka and the team, for a comprehensive presentation. But I've got a few questions to pick up here. The completion of the other register on the immovable property, when do we anticipate to complete it? Because I remember a year or so ago we were reported to that this was married, where there was an outstanding balance of 5% for the register to be completed. And here we see today, it would seem to me it's not completed. When do we eliminate? I think we'll complete it. Do I get the impression that the PMTE is now operational, fully functional and stuff? The issue of the job creation, I noticed a disjunction between the 1.1 million jobs created out of the public works program vis-a-vis skills developed out of the program. I would have comprehended this whole program to be meaning that the rationale behind it is also to mean that each and every person employed out of this program will come out with some form of skill or whatever for them to be able to go out there and challenge the labor market on their own. But then I noticed in the numbers the distance between the jobs created and the skills developed. Can you perhaps expand on that? My own observation, construction industry is really a man with a lot of problems. To cite one example, you might have made that observation yourself. The employment of foreign nationals at the expense of South Africans, that's not mean we support that. We're not going to buy tanks. Our primary mandate is to serve South Africans. But we see and observe out there on the ground that many foreign nationals are prioritized precisely because of they consume that which is called cheap paper by construction industry. What is the role of department to really regulate that kind of thing? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. My colleague has, and he is actually my colleague, believe it or not. Prosperous New Year to everyone here. And also, sorry that I was late. There was unfortunately issues that I had to resolve before I could run into this committee. Chairperson, through you, thank you for this. It was a real comprehensive budget that you, or expenditure that you told us about, and I really appreciate it. But there are a few things that really do worry me, and the ones on the lease agreements. As you've known yourself, we've had MECs in the Northern Cape where I come from. Specific MEC is not MEC anymore, he's Honorable Block, or now Mr. Block. With all these ventures in the Northern Cape, my problem is these agreements have been done for 10 years, etc., which is against the law. I want to know, have you actually investigated these lease agreements in the Northern Cape with public works? Because we must be looking throughout these things. We cannot say, okay, this has happened now, and this term must now first go for 10 years, for instance. I really do believe this must be looked into. Then the second thing, my colleague was talking about the asset register, and I'm only going to leave those two. The asset register, Minister Cronin, when I asked him that question in the NCOP in last year, 2015, the answer he gave us was that it's difficult to really get to a point where we say this is an asset register because you're selling and buying and going on like that. But But surely there must be a stage where you have asset register, I say, this is the assets that we do have. Can you perhaps just give us some more information on this? Because I believe my colleagues got exactly the same issue on that. I can tell you, for instance, in Hartswater, in Jammerkentdorp, there are houses that, public works houses, that's been given to the Department of Police. And these houses are looking like you would not even let anyone live in these places. But it's standing there. I went to the municipality, we looked into it. It's assets of the Department of Public Works. Nothing has been done for this, and I'm talking about this last 5 years. Now, how long before public works get to the asset and decide, let's get rid of it, let's sell this, or let's renovate? But I mean, in 5-6 years, this type of things is unacceptable. This is where I'm coming back to the asset register. When will we get to a point where we can say, we understand these are assets, but we have to or renovate or get rid of it? Thank you, Chair.
I think the issue of the asset register has been touched adequately, and probably would have to reach a stage at some point where we conclude this matter. We even did an example that when we went on our oversight visit to Port Elizabeth, we saw, buildings standing there, you could tell, because if you know historically how buildings of public works have been built, you can easily identify them. We have been speaking about these things to the department, and there seems to be no progress recorded. If you go to slide 10, we are talking about the historical perspective, raising some critical issues that we would really need to hear about. What is the level of progress, and tangibly, what is the department doing in relation to probably your allegation of fraud and corruption? Because you just touched on it, but you never said what is the level of progress so far. Where are we going? Because if there's one department that is falling under our jurisdiction, that we would really want to see it moving into the bracket where we can be able to say we are now satisfied that the department is doing well. It's on allegations like this one. The National Treasury approval, also you said it was approved around 2006 and it was never implemented. Consequence management, you don't speak about it. What is it that has been done? How do we avoid this moving into the future? I think from where I'm sitting, Chair, that things like the lack of stability in leadership positions, I think from where I'm sitting, I think we are beginning to make progress, and in future it would be better if we get a sense as to what is the department's view on that. If you go to slide 18, record number 2, all investigations, 39 of them initiated within 30 days. They are initiated and when are they concluded? Because initiation is just but one part of process. And these are the things that are at times testing into the resources that we need urgently for the department. And these are the things that if we can be able to improve, we can be able to save resources for the department. Page 20, slide number 2. 130 projects out of 542. This is not even 50%. And I don't think we are moving into the right direction with regards to that. And that should be surely be improved. But the presentation does not tell us what is the intention on behalf of the department to ensure that these matters are resolved. Page 21, slide number 2. No, page 21, bullet point number 2. 11 buildings are retrofitted with water savings installations. This is one of the departments that we would need to see moving with the necessary speed to ensure that these things are improved. And probably because you are also renting buildings to other departments, does this include the other departments that are your tenants?
and what is the department moving forward as part of the national strategy, making sure that we preserve water. 33. There seems to be an emphasis on the issue that the issues of disclaimers are historical and they're coming far back. But if you look at, I think it's 2013-2014, matters of emphasis, restatement of corresponding figures. Can you look at the next slide again? It's still appearing. Are we unable to solve that? I mean, material impairment. Are we unable to resolve that? How long should we be able to say we can be able to take out some of the issues that are appearing as matters of emphasis with speed with urgency so that we can be able to move? I think these are the things that, if indeed CFO, your presentation is anything to go by, I mean, we have adequate skilled people in the department to take these things out. And we shouldn't be carrying matters of emphasis year on year when we can be able to resolve them. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for those questions. I noticed that all three honourable members, and now one is not here, raised the question of the asset register. And I thought I must just intervene on that one and indicate that I have been requested by the committee in the province, in the Gauteng legislature, to get their copy of the asset register as well, some of the requests that you have. Because it was said in the presentation that if all three spheres of government that are involved in this, and therefore there's that provincial interest, Honourable Faber is here. Honourable Faber, I'm just trying to respond to the matter of the asset register. So what has happened in the meantime is that Shabila has been very helpful during the holiday period to even try and get the documentation. What we have here now is a progress report on the immovable asset register, which is 6 pages only, which you can gladly share with you. Shabila, just make a note and share it with all the members then. The second thing, colleagues, which is a bit of a complicated one, they send us the further data on a CD. And we have tried to, Shabila tried to email it me, and I just can't get it. It's just too big a file. So we may want to say that if you have, we will look at that. Let's put it to you this way. Shabila, let's look at whether we can get CDs from Parliament, or we could buy them, because the CDs are relatively cheap. And then I would want to then hear from the leadership from the department. Is it then okay for us to share that with all the members of the select committee, with an understanding that it is informed by the progress report? As you have said, it can't be up to date. The final report will only be available in March, but there has been significant work done in terms of updating the immovable asset register. Also to note that it's divided into two categories. You have buildings and you have land as well. So that adds to the volumes, nature of the CD itself. But for the leadership to guide us in terms of making that available, because the request originally was to say, I want to give it to the legislature in Gauteng. I don't think that would be a problem, but I'm just trying not to make your life difficult by requesting you to guide us on that. It's just on the asset register. The other questions we leave with you, and after this we'll take another round of questions.
Thanks, Jefferson. My colleagues will then complement my response. With respect to the asset register, I think talking directly to the question of guidance that Jefferson is asking, I think the only request that we make with respect to the asset register is that we really for security reasons then not distribute information as it pertains to national people. The second point would then be an issue of saying when it comes to the information that's provided, there will then be 2 points of understanding, which is the first one being the information is unaudited. The second one would be that it is at information of an asset register at a point in time, which is then subject to change because the program of verification or valuation of just getting to a point of an accurate asset register is a program that is aimed to conclude except the 31st of March 2016 in terms of the programs, the multi-year program that we had, and that program is getting to an end. Now, one of the issues is we also have been working on the vetting process. To give an example, we ask why would this change the information. I mean, as we move along, vesting transactions happen between national and province and between province and national as well. That results in some of the changes and movements in the asset register. That's one of the comments. The issue about when will we be complete is an issue that we asked for over 20 years, as many years that the department has been engaging around this problem of getting the immovable asset to this complete. And I think as an assertion of management, we are saying the deadline of 31 March is a non-negotiable for us. We have done the necessary ring fencing, and we have got a very good perspective of where we are in terms of the asset register. And Mr. Mori is able to also quote some of the numbers with some level of detail, because those are our assets, and we are quite clear about where we are as far as that program of assets is concerned, using a combination of the basic being going out to see the assets, which is the physical verification. While we are out seeing the assets, we are making sure that we are also logging the GIS information of our assets, the land and the buildings. I need also make the point that our point of reference initially would always be the deed records and the reconciliation when we are done back to the deed records. So in terms of supporting a management assertion, I think we have made a lot of progress in the context of the fact that when one looks at our property portfolio, it is the biggest portfolio by a very large stretch. I know the often quoted example is to say that one of the biggest listed operations of property management in a growth point, for example, which only has about 440 properties. We are sitting with a quantum of land parcels that are over 80,000. In terms of structures, we are sitting at 100, in the region of 110,000 structures, which they range from the residential properties that have previously been used by, and currently in some instances by defense justice and the police in certain instances, to the commercial being your office accommodation, which then shapes itself as really the main asset base. A specific question that's being asked is around the what looks like neglected properties and what is neglected properties, some of which, in fact, a good number of which is residential properties, for a number of reasons, have appeared to be unattended to from a maintenance program. It is true. We have gone around the country to firstly, as part of the asset maintenance program, and I'm talking about the asset register program, accounted for these assets in the main. The major and one of the biggest programs that we are embarking on now is a program on maintenance, which is going to cut across all of the asset classes, because we are of the opinion that as much as we spend over 3 billion rand on maintenance, there is a significant component of the spend which is not paid for. So you need to put it in a structured maintenance program that is plain structured and starts to address all those elements. For instance, once you have established that you have got those residential properties in Jan Kendall, you need to do a couple of things. You need to go and assess the condition of those properties before you spend a cent on them. You need to also be able to see what is the use or the possible use that government can have for that asset. In a lot of instances, we are finding that there are lease agreements that have been signed many years ago on those houses. You need to consider the entire context of it before you start saying, well, we renovate this building. What is the investment decision that pertains to that one property in the Amkentop, which has to be relative to the property market in that particular area? Now, if you take that small issue and you multiply it by the number of properties that we have, the work that's been done on the asset registry side is really the beginning. Now, to demonstrate that all of these actions do not work as isolated events, but they are part of a master program, which is the turnaround plan, which was driven by this minister starting in 2012. For example, on the investment side, we are now building the capacity to be able to provide the research and information which will enable us to make that decision at the level of a small town like that. Be able to also link their particular asset to a particular need of a particular department on the user demand side of our operations. For instance, we could be using a house as a small town, we could be using that house to start to build on our program of government service centers in small areas where we are taking those services to a small and rural towns, for example, and which is linked to our present development of government services for small and rural towns. And that's just the example. So once February, the research unit starts to kick in, it's already been capacitated and it will be precisely that. So your growth point on every single asset, it has the types of information that informs an investment decision that is ongoing. And we will get to a point where we are able to advise government appropriately about the performance of each and every asset in our portfolio. I think in terms of the progress we have made as far as the operationalization of the PMTE, it is one of the primary features. I mean, if you look at our 3-year turnaround, then it starts with the stabilization phase. I think in the main, it was supposed to respond to the diagnostic issues that the Honorable Tebe highlights on slide 10. Amongst other things, it's a very detailed program. So it was a stabilization phase, and I think primarily from a governance perspective, which is very fundamental, we have managed to achieve a lot of the issues. Now it's evident in the move that has happened on the old outcomes. We are currently in the efficiency enhancement phase, which talks to how are we going to do our business better. And that is really about making sure that the property management business is professionalized, is able to be very responsive to the user requirements, and we are addressing our mandate a lot better. That is what was critical for me to go back and say, in terms of the turnaround plan, is the performance improving or not? Because yes, we accept that we cannot be happy with the 50-something% performance, but it's a relative improvement year on year as we move from a performance perspective. One of the areas that we speak about is we are committed to do a proper transfer of assets. We have done that. That is really taking, and it's not simply just an issue of a document, but it is redefining for the organization that policy and regulation will be a function of the Department of Public Works, and there will be this operationalization of a trading entity called the PNGE, and we are now physically moving those functions across. I think that has been done. One of the areas that we needed to address was to make sure that we then update the functional structures for both organizations and make sure that institutional arrangements are in place and that people are now established in those different functions. We have now submitted, I think the minister signed off in November. Is it November? It was November, yeah. And we expect that in the next month we will have DPSA approval of that new start. Now that's one of the steps to say we are meeting those conditions to move from the 2006 cabinet resolution to a point where we can absolutely say the trading entity is fully established. In terms of the top leadership structure of the PMTE, we have completed the placement. We found the fields in terms of the majority of the top level. We are left with two positions. The first position is head of construction. We currently have somebody that is acting at the moment and will be looking for a more permanent arrangement. We then have the head of SCM, which a process we have finalized. So that's another one. In terms of the head of investment, so it's three. In terms of the head of investment, it's one of the very difficult positions that we have found to fill. We've actually previously identified the candidate concluded finalized, and he was actually snatched by one of the Arabic property management companies at the last minute. So we have approached it from a targeted recruitment perspective, and we are quite confident that we will find someone else there. But those, the two that are still outstanding to repeat really the construction and the investment services roles. Below that, we have also gone out into the market, specifically targeted property management experts. Everybody in the space, in the market, struggles to find those particular individuals. There are not many. The training programs for them are very limited. You can actually see when you go to the universities, an engagement that we have had with the various engagements we have had with the universities. There are not many students in property studies that are there. So we are competing in that space for a market that is also wanting to find itself, you know, amongst all the other issues of identity that we are currently trying to establish within the department. You then move on to the more technical side of things, where you got your engineering services, your quantity services. Again, we are in a market for things that are fairly scarce. I can give an example of electrical engineering. I could give an example of quantity surveying. You know, so one of the strategies over and above the targeted recruitment process that we think we are starting to get right is to say our human capital investment program, which is specifically aimed at targeting the new graduates, the numbers in those particular skills areas are starting to filter into the environment, and we are quite confident that in the next 2 to 3 years, those will be the people that are helping us in the ship in the right direction. And those are the types of sustainable implementation. I would like to emphasize that we do have a desire that we could have a much quicker turnaround, but quantum of and the extent of the department is actually quite large, and it's a relativity to again, the task and the mandate that we have in relation to what is out there in the market. On the lease, in fact, the one who says this question that was asked, and I would like to say as part of this specific concern about, we are reviewing a couple of things, and one of the ones that we have asked is to say we need to change the manner in which we procure our leases in the market. The first assertion and confidence that we need to assert ourselves is to say, as government, we are the biggest procurer of lease accommodation. So there must be a benefit to the fact that we do buy in a very structured manner. We provide a lot of certainty to the leasing environment. If one understands how the leading instrument works, predominantly from a property owner perspective, the value is given by having a certain level of certainty, because you need to have, then once you've got the certainty, the comfort that investment I make in the property will then yield the right returns for myself. That's the link to instruments as well. So what we believe, particularly after a report that a review we did of our lease, which we see the report, we now know for a fact that in over half the cases we may be overpaying by quite a significant amount. And I'd like to emphasize that it's not as a result of any irregularity, but it's as a result of some of these systems that we have been unable to put in place over time to make sure that our procurement is very clear upfront and supports the assertion that we are above procure, and there is no reason why we should pay a cent more than what the market pays, which is the market of landlords and business amongst themselves, whose rates are published. I say we are going to start moving towards normalizing that difference between what the market is paying and what government is paying in terms of leasing environments. If I could just pause on those and ask that the CFO responds to some of the financial issues, and thereafter Mr. Henderson will respond to the question around job creation versus skills development. And there was a question on construction, which I think Mr. Tobakali will touch base with, will respond to. I apologize. Thank you. Thanks.
Can I just ask that the other respondents look at the clock as well, please?
Thanks, Jay. I'll try to be very brief. The question was around, in terms of slide 33. Okay. That is, the issues, matters of emphasis. Two items were mentioned. Why don't you correct this? And the first one is the number of figures. Maybe let me explain emphasis of matters in a fuller manner. That it is not necessarily a negative thing. An emphasis of matters is raised to bring a matter to the attention of the reader of the financial statement to have a better understanding or context thereto. So, if you look at the two things that I mentioned, the restatement of corresponding figures and the material impact, as I did indicate, we've had a transfer of funds from the neighborhood to PNG. Now, this has own complexity. When you transfer funds, you're going to have to restate the prior figures to make it right, even though you are doing it in this year. Because the figures you are restating in the prior year are large, it is important or it is appropriate for the aid to raise the matter so that the reader of financial statements can understand the context. So that's the corresponding figures. The one around impairments is that, the impairments, they are material. It's large numbers. So the aid is saying, I want to bring to the attention of the reader that you must be aware that these receivables have been impacted to the extent of so much money. And it's a good thing to look at your receivables and ask yourself, will I actually get this money or will I not? And if I'm not going to get this money, let me pay to show the true money that I can collect from the people. It's positive, it's negative. So that's how we look at it. But I think your point taken, that it is precisely because of the expertise that you have in the department from a technical accounting expertise that you manage to do this, that the agency is there. It's because of precisely that. But it's not corrected by the agency. They are raising this is because we've raised them. Because we've got technically proficient people and accountants to be able to account for this appropriately, respect corresponding figures and raise the impairments. Thanks.
But would it be correct then to interpret you saying that this property management entity will, in the 2015-2016 financial year, be handled completely differently, in that the situation will be regularized now?
Like I said, this is, you know, in the prior, we had transferred the functions from the main board to the property management entity. However, the budget was still sitting for the main board and had a contract. Now, currently, the budget is now moved to the main board. So it will stabilize the accounting environment in a way, because the budget will be accounted for in the entity where the transactions are being experienced there. But like I said, you know, the journey towards getting PMTE to be what it's supposed to be is the journey. And I think we try to get it to that. It's a very complex environment. We are fixing up the car as motion car thing. Yeah, introducing new systems and whatever, but that's, you know, the nature of the business.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you. Members, question regarding to work opportunities versus training. We like to emphasize there is no separate funding for training. So all training funds are accessed through the Department of Higher Education and Training and or through CEDAS. We have secured over the 5-year period 394 million rand for training. There are obviously several competing priorities that they be up against. But the 24 million that we have to decide now, how are we going to prioritize training for 94 million land over the 5-year period? And our approach was to focus on artisan development, because it's one of the government's priorities, and we focus on longer duration training rather than short duration training, which means if we would be focusing on short duration training, we would be like a 1-week course, for instance, we would have been able to train for the training available 2,800 persons. We have gone the other way. We have said we want to provide meaningful training, therefore we are prioritizing training of 185,000 participants. And we are entirely aware that it is not adequate given the number of work opportunities created. But it is linked also to the duration of projects. So if we have longer duration projects, it is possible to find more meaningful training also over time. So, and we would like to remind ourselves also that we prioritize training in public and private programs, but obviously governments will have broad skills development training through key departments. So we had to make a call in terms of what is meaningful for public and private programs. Then we should emphasize also that we are currently exploring partnerships with the private sector. And we have had some success, albeit limited. We are currently, through Mercy, we are paying 98 artisans, and they are placed with different companies such as Genetic Engineering, Volkswagen South Africa, Trading Precision, Marion Roberts, a whole range of which to us is a very positive development that the private sector actually, but we would like to take a new scale of obviously, but we are very encouraged by the small steps we have taken, and that at least the private sector, they are committing themselves to make a contribution in this environment. We focus currently on through the private sector on
auto electrical frame, motor mechanics, diesel mechanics, etc., and efficient. So that is one. So yes, there's no other one-to-one skill match, but if we have make certain key calls with regard to the funding that we have secured through the Department of Education and FAME.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Member. We have already stated through the presentation by Mr. Sorota that we are acknowledging that the performance of the construction branch in terms of projects that are completed or projects that get to be headed over for construction is low. We have also made a point that if you compare with previous years moving forward, there is that progress that is being made, although it is not a target which is there. I am not going to delve much into the challenges, but there are just two very significant considerations to look at. Firstly, the capacity within the department in terms of teams, and also the number of project managers that are the projects that are being implemented on the project. The other consideration is the project implementation methodology that we have been utilizing as a department, which is tied to internal control processes in terms of making it aware that our processes comply with the regulations. This has prompted a need for us to then, as part of the turnaround program, have a specific project which is called construction turnaround, which focuses exclusively on putting into the system improvement activities that are linked to the performance of the construction branch. The highlight that one can indicate is that to deal with capacity issues, as Mr. Rogers indicated, we have interacted with the education institution and we are able to bring in young professionals into the department and deploy them in strategic areas where we have shortfalls in terms of skills. We have also been able to attract retired professionals. The reason being that we want to utilize their wisdom and experience to mentor the young professionals, but also to add on the numbers, as I've indicated, that we've got the challenge of the region. We are actually advancing the process of reviewing our own internal processes without compromising internal controls, mainly to make it a point that we aren't a victim of our own elaborate processes in terms of getting from planning, design to construction. We are also interacting with other implementing agents in the industry, especially those that are doing a lot of work in the implementation of public infrastructure. That is your like CUHA, Development Bank of South Africa, and the IDG. This interaction is actually supported by GTEC, which is a unit in Treasury, which is meant to assist departments on improving performance. Hopefully, for the lessons that we learned on this, implementing agents will be able to augment the process that I've indicated, that we are far advanced with the process of reviewing our internal processes. The other challenges that we faced in the migration of these functions on the implementation side to PMG is going to assist in better communication with our clients, because some of the problems that we face is getting confirmation of what is it that needs to be done, the scope of work and budgets from clients. In some instances, we found situations where when we are far advanced with design, clients change what needs to be the outcome on the ground in terms of what needs to be constructed. So we are working towards improving that, and the results as we move on, as Mr. Sorota indicated, that we are now in the healthy phase of the turnaround program, we start showing in terms of the performance of the construction branch. Another question that was asked that I will touch on just briefly is the question on the employment of foreigners as the employment of South Africans. In implementing our projects, both capital and maintenance, we track the employment of local labor utilizing the model that VWP is implementing. So for instance, on project A, a number is indicated of local labor employed to be, for an example, 20. The basis on which we verify that is to request for South African IT. And that is the basis on which we're able to track and we're able to make it a point that we maximize the employment of South African labor. There is employment of foreign nationals, but we also request the documentation that shows their status in the country as part of tracking against the utilization of unrecognized persons in the implementation of our project. That is the basis on which we track the employment of South African labor, and we can provide figures in terms of the number of people that are employed, both in maintenance and capital projects, but also in EPWP. It's one of the targets that we have in the annual performance plan. Thank you, Chair. That's it.
Thank you very much. The phone was left in the toilet, and I think the caller is not trying to locate the phone. We worried about the time, but we know that you have traveled a long way. So we want to give you the opportunity, but ask you to be as concise as you possibly can without avoiding the answer. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, a few of the questions on fraud and corruption, and I noted three questions around that topic. Firstly, with respect to leasing in. Secondly, with respect to the 39 cases processed during the year under review 2014-15. And thirdly, I also noted the question about our overall strategy in combating fraud and corruption. Chairperson, with respect to the 39 cases reported in the annual report, I can report that 23 of those cases were finalized, 5 of them are still in the internal reporting stage, 7 are at the field work stage, and 3 were reported to the SIU. All those, Chairperson, I think I can state that they resulted in 30 disciplinary actions. Number 4 of them have been finalized, 2 resulted in dismissals, 1 suspension without pay, 2 found not guilty, and 1 case was not pursued due to a lack of evidence. Chairperson, looking at the turnaround strategy as a whole and reporting the statistics since 2012, a number of cases were inherited in 2012, and the department displayed a tendency to investigate cases over a 4 or 5 month period, and we inherited a significant backlog. Since the turnaround strategy comment, we've now to date investigated 330 cases, of which 240 have been finalized, 18 at the reporting stage, 36 at the fieldwork stage, 38 reported to the SIU, and 3 to the SEP. All those, Chairperson, almost 100 of the 330 matters constitute allegations of fraud and corruption. 92 refer to tender irregularities. 23 refer to the use or the abuse of the creation order system, where we utilize our system to increase tender prices with respect to construction projects. 80 refer to leasing irregularities. All the 330, Chairperson, we have then finalized 214 matters, and this resulted in 196 disciplinary matters, of which 103 have been finalized. We had 5 dismissals, 24 written warnings, 11 final written warnings, 15 suspensions without pay, while 17 were found not guilty, and 36 matters were not pursued due to a lack of evidence. We have 93 disciplinary actions currently pending. Chairperson, we also have the SIU on the other hand. The SIU has a number of proclamations related to the department. We record a proclamation on leasing, which the colleague makes mention of. I'd like to state that the leases that you refer to comes within the purview of that particular proclamation. That proclamation is looking at all leases concluded from the 1st of April 2003 to August 2014. So any lease conducted outside normal tender process is within the scope of work of the SIU. We also have a number of other proclamations with SIU, the Research General Procurement, as well as the Prestige renovations in the second day. Chairperson, with respect to the SIU and these proclamations, 14 letters have already been included by the SIU. With remaining in progress, we have got a record of 42 disciplinary actions already referred by the SIU. We have had 4 senior officials resigned before proceedings commenced. 5 of the official senior officials received something warnings, 6 were dismissed, and 27 matters are still pending. The SIU also recorded 19 referrals to the SEPs for prosecution purposes. And we also have several matters, 8 several matters that entail the recovery of an excess of 300 million rands. In our internal anti-corruption unit, we also record 34 matters referred to the SEPs for criminal investigation. In fact, during the year, we have a first for the department that 2 officials were found guilty of corruption, even before the SEPs commenced with their investigations. Chairperson, in terms of our overall strategy, I'd like to make a mention to the committee that the department, under the turnaround strategy, is pursuing a holistic approach to corruption beyond mere investigation. What we are doing is we are focusing heavily on prevention and detection, and this requires an understanding of the architecture of fraud and corruption in the department and the decentralization of responsibility for mitigating fraud and corruption risks to line managers. So we invest a fair amount of time in this process. In fact, in our new annual performance plan, we are beginning to measure fraud risk. Within this framework, other than focusing on education and awareness within the department and deterring fraud and corruption, we also have a more intensive relationship with the SEPs, as well as the SIU, with whom we work very closely together, as well as internally with our own labor relations unit, so we achieve successful prosecution. So, chapters here, we have a holistic strategy that's focusing very heavily on prevention and detection going forward, and using a number of deterrent strategies. I would report to the committee that we've investigated a whole plethora of different cases, and I think the message is beginning to be communicated in the department of the minister's statement of zero tolerance towards fraud and corruption. But I think we're very much on a trajectory. I don't think we will want to be, but we're well on our way to dealing with the problem. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm in trouble today because I've only taken 3 questions. I mean 3 members. Honorable Jihaya, are you burning on the seat to raise a question?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think a lot has been said, and we really received positive responses. What I can assure you, Chairperson, and the honorable members and the members from the department, is to say that now the stability in our province is important. Honorable Mokhoro. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I anticipated that you would be able to accommodate us. From my side, I just want to say that on the slide where you show the jobs created by the municipalities, there is a concern about that. That the municipalities, according to your presentation, are not pulling their weight. I'm looking particularly at slide 27, but we will engage with you at some other time on that. Also, the second thing that I want to say is when you presented to us last year, there was a lot of interest in the EPWP. And what we then decided as a committee was that we will have separate presentation on the EPWP. This time around, there is a lot of interest in the construction sector. So, can I hear from the honorable members, do you want us to have a separate presentation on the consumption sector? It won't cut out our program, we'll slot it into the regular program activities. If it's possible for us to do that, would you want us, when the department's scheduled to report to us again, to then come with a much more focused presentation on that sector? Does the members want that? Yes, okay. 2 members are okay. Honorable Father, are you okay?
No, yes.
Honorable Jimunya, you're not going to work us. Thank you. Thank you. We'll work with you on the details through the Office of our Secretary on that. To say thank you very much to you for the presentation. We appreciate that there are a lot of elements in your report in which progress has been made. We want to encourage you not to become content, but to continue to strive so that we can take this Department of Public Works into a space where it really works for the public. Thank you very, very much. I wanted to commend you. Now it's going to go to Henderson and Public Works. We went on oversight in Melbourne, and your department is funding the construction of police station. Two interesting things that's happening. The construction company is employing local people and giving them skills as well. They have 47 learners, one dropout of the 47. Now comes the interesting statistic. This is the construction sector. 35 females and 11 males. And they're not telling us these things. We have seen these young people in the project themselves. And they've also had the opportunity to talk to them privately. And they are proud of it. That's one element of it. So, it's good. The second thing of it is that this three-story police station that is being built by the local community would be the highest building in Melbourne, being three stories high, and it's going to be the police station. there are some good things that you are doing in the rural areas, and we want to say that part of our oversight is not always to just talk about you, about the things that you're struggling with, but also commend you for the good things that you're doing. Can you maybe stay with us? You can pack your stuff and stay with us, because I think we're going to disperse if the members agree with me. And what we're going to do now is just two things. To look at the minutes of the last meeting and to look at the reports. Now, on the oversight of the reports and this, can I put it to you in this way and say that these reports have been shared with us before, and we have agreed in October that you will give feedback on the reports by that Friday. Therefore, with the time constraints that we have now, can I take from the House that we indeed accept the three oversight reports? It's for the oversight in April of last year in PE, for the oversight in KwaZulu-Natal, followed by the oversight in Northwest. Honourable Faber.
Chairperson, I would suggest that good, except if on the draft report on page 1 on the joint oversight report to Rittenberg, they just spell me as father and a farmer. Because I don't know what will be a farmer. That's much more German than me.
Edward Junior, are you okay?
Okay, on the report on the oversight to KwaZulu-Natal, I meet a very important project, I think, from where I think it's one that touches lives. The one at the rural school and of my family. I meet that part not reflected.
This is the agricultural
care
of Marina. And I say that what we say is that the committee accepts what's here and we agree. The members have, other than those two comments that were already made, members have until 12 noon on Friday to add to the reports. If there are no additions, then it's done. Okay. Thank you very much. Members, can we then do the last business, which is the minutes? Do we need to adopt the... You have seen the person program. Do we need to adopt this? We don't need to adopt it. Do we need to adopt it? So, right, but all of you have seen the person program. For me, the concern about that program, honourable members, is that in February, we're only able to meet once as this committee, and once the Committee on Trade and International Relations. But this committee, when we meet them, we will also be receiving the report from the National Treasury on the implementation of the jobs fund. So those six departments that are reporting to us, that's why I said earlier it's going to be a tough year, because we're going to have difficulty sorting all the departments in, particularly when it comes to the DPPs again. Honourable Father?
Yes, sir. What concerns me, the annual planning for this committee, when will that take place?
It will happen in the progress. It will happen, the strategic planning and review is on the 8th to the 9th of March. The 8th to the 9th of March. Because most of February will be spending on state of the province. There is a sitting of the NCOP in February, but there's the state of the nation address and there's also the budget. No, we normally do it in March. Honourable Ndebe?
Chair, I share your concern in relation to being able to meet once in February. Though we know that February now is spent. But is it possible that behind the scene, with your leadership, of course, you can look into the possibility of sorting on one extra possible meeting of the select committee, and you can then look into it so that at least we have a minimum of two meetings sitting and looking into. Thanks.
We will definitely do that. I looked at the program this morning of the NCLP. It doesn't look very good, but we will continue to look at it as a big thing as well. The final thing then, honourable members, is the minutes of the last meeting.
Before the final thing, sir.
Sure. Honourable Dihana.
There is a report by session which has to happen. I don't know whether it has to happen or it happened. On the 29th February to 3 March 2015.
Now you are forgiven, ma'am. You are going to the date and say so it's wrong.
I've looked at the minutes of the last meeting. It starts off with the people that were present, goes into the apologies. I'm presenting it to you as I speak to you. Then it goes to a presentation, and the presentation was done for us by the Department of Labor. Then there were comments made by members of the committee. We adopted the minutes of the last meeting, and then we had the announcements. Now, I would just want to make one, or test you on one thing. Honourable Father, Honourable Lont is not here, so you need to help us on that. On the last page, it is said the chairperson of the Department of Labour, he concluded the meeting by informing members that Honourable Lont and himself would be presenting three pieces of international agreements. Honourable Lund could not have been presenting international agreements. So can we just take Honourable Lund out there and say that he would be presenting? It can't be three pieces of song. It's just one. We have done the other two already. I think this is all related to the shipping. Remember, we did lots of things on shipping last year. So that we just change it to say that he would be presenting an international agreement in the National Council of Provinces at $1,400. If we look at Ansar, Ansar will tell us what that agreement was that we presented at that time. Honourable Haber.
Honourable J, the only reason that I can think of that Honourable Lord indicated that the DA members would not be able to travel to the DRC due to this was because of election time at that stage. So that was the only reason for that part. The rest, unfortunately, I agree with you. It can't be involved.
But you covered. You covered in terms of the election part, because we didn't want to say it's election because it's by elections in Otsu that you mentioned. And then also, he said we have political party work that we need to do at that time. So if we use this broad as a political party work, then it's covered. Okay. But then we've done the correction on the last page with regard to presentation to the House. Can I get a proposal for the acceptance of that minute? Honorable Tere, seconded by Honorable Dikale, later in Mpopo rather than Mpumalanga. Honorable members, staff from the Department of Public Works, you are invited for lunch. The only problem is we need to find the restaurant. Thank you very much again for your presentation. We welcome it.
Chairperson, just before we go, we said last year that a lot of the departments do have video conferencing facilities. And I was just speaking to Honourable Member Gerard here next to me, and we must really look into it, because yes, I do believe it is costly to you as well as departments to come to Cape Town all the time, and I'm sure they also have video conference facilities. We at Parliament do have that. Honourable Sisulu, through a lot of feeding from overseas countries, but need to be stored in certain committee rooms. And I really want to consider that perhaps we as a committee can take also the leading role in showing that this is how we can start as Committee of International Relations, Public Works, and all our committees, that we can start implementing this to really cut costs. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
I wanted to suggest that we package a lot of issues and actually impact them for our session at the committee. Yeah. That's the point I wanted to make as a writer.
Can I ask Grace that please put it in a manner, but also say that we need to discuss it in our strategic planning. And then, as you know, when we do, when we have to strike them, just remind us.
Thank you.